Hello and welcome back. My name is Seth Juarez. We're here at Decode 2016 in Tokyo, Japan. It's wonderful to be here.
It really is. It's very exciting.
I have two guests here, Chris Reisner and Drew Robbins. You may know him. Drew Robbins, actually, during the keynote, you remember, danced a little for us.
I saw that. It was disturbing.
There is not enough mind bleach to clean the images out of my head.
It's terrible.
Any comments about that, Drew? No. Okay, we'll let you be silent on that fact. Tell us who you are, buddy. What you do?
So my name is Chris Reisner, and I'm a technical evangelist from Washington over in the United States. And I do numerous things, mostly just talk to you.
Oh, right.
But I focus on a lot of Azure, kind of non-traditional Microsoft technology. I do a lot of iOS and Android development. Kind of the thing I do a lot of my work on is talking about mobile connectivity into Azure. Mm-hmm. But I kind of get my hands dirty with everything in there.
Fantastic. So this is live. So if you have any questions, please make sure to put them in the question box below and we will answer them as they come. So let's talk about the mobile stuff first, because there's a lot of stuff on Azure that you can do with mobile. Maybe people aren't sure what kind of services there are. Maybe you can help clarify for us.
So kind of the thing that probably most people have heard of is something called Azure Mobile Services, and that was launched a few years ago, and that was really Azure's original backend as a service. So if you're building a mobile application and you want to, you know, be able to use a bunch of these capabilities that a lot of mobile apps use, but you don't have to build out your whole backend yourself, you can spin up an Azure Mobile Service and you get stuff like data storage, authentication, push notifications, stuff that's very common in mobile apps, but that you don't want to have to build out yourself.
Sure.
And so more recently, as part of Azure App Service, we launched Azure Mobile Apps.
I see.
And mobile apps is almost like a second generation, second version of mobile services. In fact, very recently, within the past few weeks, we basically announced that we are going to, you know, kind of deprecate Azure Mobile Services. So there's going to be a mandatory migration. So you can go in right now and choose to manually migrate your Azure Mobile Services and mobile apps, or by at a certain point, we'll kind of do it for you. Because the thing with mobile services is that it was kind of built in a very custom way. So if there was ever any new features added to Azure App Service, for example, you wouldn't really get to take advantage of those from the mobile services without a lot of work.
I see.
But now that it's on top of mobile apps, any new features just instantly get turned on for mobile apps. So it's really great.
So let's talk about this, because there's this notion of thing called an app service, that's app services, and then there's like things inside of it. I mean, getting down to the developer level, what's the difference between all these things? I mean, how would you categorize them for us?
Yeah, so there's a concept of an Azure App Service, and that's kind of a combined offering of several different capabilities. So there's web apps, which is kind of a very easy way to host web applications, whether you're writing in .NET or Node, et cetera. Then there's mobile apps, which is essentially really, it's a web app with a custom SDK built that you can deploy on top of it. And so that SDK is kind of what lights up some of those capabilities for that easy data storage and authentication and things like that. And then there's other parts of app service as well, like API apps, and then more recently Azure Functions, which is a serverless kind of a technology.
Sure.
So you don't have to basically say, you know, I want X VM and I want to run it all the time. It's more of a dynamic compute scenario.
Got it. So if you're in mobile services now and you're going to make the move to mobile apps, what is the difference and what are you gaining?
So one of the big differences, you're no longer going to be in the kind of the old portal, that very blue and white portal.
Yeah.
It's kind of one of the big things. But essentially, if you go into that portal right now and look at your mobile services, they'll actually get a little thing to prompt you and say, hey, would you like to migrate? And there's some great documentation on the Azure website that talks about what you should do, especially to ensure that you don't have any downtime. So it talks about if you have a productionized app, you want to, first deploy a new mobile application and you know, essentially test out the migration on that. And then once you're confident that everything works fine and you know what you're doing, you know, then migrate the actual production version. And there's very, very, very minimal downtime here. So
right.
The idea is that if you do a production app, it'll stay up. And of course, you know, just like anything else, you wouldn't want to push something live in the middle of the day when you have a lot of usage.
Of course.
You know, you still want to do this, you know, in the off hours of your app usage, but, you know, very minimal downtime, very, you know, easy migration. But, when you go into your mobile service in the portal, it'll prompt it for you right there. Now, the great thing about the migration is that all the capabilities of mobile services are still there in mobile applications, but then you get a lot of other really great capabilities that you just didn't get mobile services. So one of the big ones is site slots that you get with Azure App Service.
Oh, so you can have stuff in like not real. What are the slots called? I always forget the names. There's like staging and production and.
Right. Well, essentially you can name them whatever you want, but the idea being that you'd have a production version of your application, then maybe a staging or testing, whatever you want to do, or even have multiple slots to test out different versions of your application, and it becomes very easy to swap the code you have deployed between those changes. So you can essentially push your changes to a test slot. When you're happy, you just swap that slot with the production one, and it basically redirects everything, so you have no downtime. You don't have to worry about pushing something to a live server and having it temporarily unavailable or anything like that.
And my understanding, Drew, if I'm correct, is that you actually name your slots after your miniature poodles, right? Fluffy and Yorgie.
I believe he does.
Yeah, thank you, Drew, for that addition. So that's cool that you have name slots that you can do that, and that was something that was not in the mobile services before, right?
That's right, and it's one of those capabilities where it was lit up on the app service platform, and because of how mobile services was built, it would have been quite a lot of work in order to enable it there as well.
I see.
But now with mobile apps, it's just available. And then there's a lot of other capabilities you get, like really easy connectivity to on-premise data storage, that scalability of app service, the resource group, the whole Azure Resource Manager ARM templates and things like that. So there's a lot of rich capabilities that this lights up.
So let's talk about now, inside of a mobile app, the sort of components that make up what's, because you talk about data and you talk about the website, but I mean, when I'm building a mobile app, let's just say I'm using Xamarin or some Apache Cordova influenced thing.
Mm-hmm.
When I build that client-side thing, what is it that I'm getting in the back end, and how would I do this interaction? Let's just say I don't know anything, which will be easy for you to imagine. Drew, any comments? Okay.
So essentially what happens is you create your mobile your Azure mobile application, and that generates a back end. You can do either Node.js or C# right now. And once you do that, you can very easily turn on capabilities like that data storage, like that authentication, just via configuration. And then there's a client SDK you would put in your Xamarin app, for example. So the really easy way to do things is to go into the portal and use the quick start to basically say, hey, I want to build a Xamarin app. And you'll get kind of a pre-built one or directions to attach that to your existing application. But essentially on the client side, you drop in an SDK, which is going to seem very natural depending on whatever you're building in.
Sure.
And then once you do that, there's some very logical and easy code that you would use to start doing the data storage, to start doing the authentication and stuff like that.
So my guess is that this SDK handles the interaction between your mobile app and your app that you're actually running.
That's exactly right. And there's really no magic behind the scenes. All of this is open source and available on GitHub, so you can go see how this SDK works. But essentially behind the scenes, everything that's part of your mobile app is exposed via REST API. So the SDKs themselves are just kind of making it easier for you to call into those REST APIs.
I see. So the REST APIs are the things that are working in the back end on the mobile app.
Exactly right.
And what you do is you go in there and you write your APIs to do whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how does that interact with the data part of it? What is it that data part, because you mentioned that does manages data. Can you explain what it is that it's implementing?
Yeah, so essentially when you, it's a little different depending on if you're doing Node.js, where it does this thing, has this thing called Easy Tables to make accessing the Azure SQL database a little bit easier, or if you're using .NET where it uses the NED framework to actually build out your data model. But essentially, it creates endpoints where you can access tables, so your Azure SQL database tables, and you get the insert, update, delete, read capabilities. And by default, it would just be just plain fetch the data, insert the data. But you have the ability to actually add logic on top of that. So say you want to validate your data, you can write validation rules there. Let's say you want to require authentication in order to access that data. You can very easily add that as attributes in C# or by changing some JSON for the Node.js side of things.
I see. Is that a function of the ORM or is that a function of the app service?
It's more a function of the app service. So as far as ORMs go, so there is like the entity framework approach there, but then on the Node.js side, you don't really have that same kind of ORM type concept.
I see.
And it's more so a function, it's really a function of the server-side SDK, whether it's Node.js or C#, because once you attribute or specify that access requires authentication, the SDK knows that and it knows when it's running, hey, in order for this request to go through, there has to be an authentic user token that is coming across as a header.
So as I'm thinking about this, right, when I'm writing an application, I'm going to have an API, right, that my app is going to call. usually it's the API that handles the data stuff. You're saying that there's an SDK that lets you access the data directly, or is that something you would do?
So essentially what it does is it's a little different depending on Node.js or C#, but it creates a very easy endpoint that is essentially, at the beginning, it's just pure REST, so it's just sending the request straight through the database.
I see.
So you still are going in between. There's still something there, like a service that you're hitting instead of actually going directly to the SQL database.
But that's a service that the app service gives you.
So that's basically a service that's part of that app service, that mobile app SDK.
Got it.
But then you have the ability to build on top of that, so you can then add rules or logic or validation
instead of
just going kind of directly from the service to the database.
So if you're just doing a standard like CRUD thing, where you just want to show like a list, you would just directly go to the standard sort of access API that's already in there, and you just pull data directly from the database.
Right. You just specify, you know, if you're doing a table controller, and if you're doing Node.js, you'd specify, you know, you'd create an easy table for it. But yeah, essentially you'd do that, and you have to write no other logic on the server side, because it's generating that table and creating all the REST API endpoints for you.
I see. And I like that, because I'm the natural like C# dev for the last however many years, and I'm already trying to like over-engineer the thing to make sure that everything, you know, I got to have my get call, I need to have my put call or whatever. And you're saying that, hey, look, if it's just a table that represents an object, it's already there.
Essentially, that's right. I mean, it becomes very easy to just add that table access and generate a new table with whatever your data model is. So instead of before, where you'd write a web API and you'd have to write the controllers and then write the logic inside of there to say, hey, go get the data from the database and, you know, here's how you insert and stuff like that, it kind of handles that base layer, all of that for you.
I see. So you don't have to write a get method or a put or a delete or whatever.
Exactly right.
And that sort of is going to shorten the cycle a lot more of doing that, all that extra work nobody wants to do.
And that's part of the whole idea, is if you want to build a mobile application, you know, if you're building a mobile app, as long as it works, I don't necessarily really care what your back end is or how your server side works. I want to have a good app experience. And so to you as an app builder, you know, the back end, you know, it's important that it runs and it works, but it's not important that you spend a lot of time on it. You just want to have something that works so you can focus on that important thing, which is that mobile application. And this is what that's, you know, lighting up for you, is this really quick scenario of being able to build out a real application with a back end.
And my understanding, Drew, is that you're actually building a mobile application for your miniature poodles, is that correct? And you pictures of them, my understanding, in spandex, your miniature, that's awesome. Thanks, Drew, for that addition. So now that we've talked about the back end and we've talked about mobile apps that have all of this stuff sort of prepackaged, because incidentally, as a side note, can you not use a mobile app and then just sort of build a mobile app with the stuff that are already in there? Like you could add an API app and then you could add whatever data stuff and it would all be there?
Yeah, there's really nothing. I mean, this is just kind of making it an easy scenario for you. So there's really nothing to stop you from consuming any other part of Azure or building out everything on top of, you know, a traditional web API or a web application in any language you want. This is just making it, you know, even easier for you to do so.
I like it. So in essence, what you're saying is this is traditionally what you need if you're doing a mobile app here.
Exactly right. It's, you know, here it is. It's, you know, it's done for you. Build on top of it, but the basic functionality is there. And you know what this really comes into play at is, you know, push notifications is a great example. Push notifications is something where if you had to build the server side out, it's actually pretty difficult. Like something you really wouldn't want to do, especially because of all the testing and the certificates and all that stuff. This makes it really easy for you to kind of get all of that basic functionality ready to go, and then you just build on top of it with, you know, whatever you want to do. So if you want to do target push notifications and stuff like that.
I see. And so a good example then you're saying is this, one of the things that are bundled in is notifications. So let's talk about notifications for those that don't know what those are. Let's just say they're brand new noobs like myself.
Sure.
What did notifications do for you in the mobile?
So essentially, if you're building a mobile application and you, from your server side, want to get information to the device. So let's say you're building an email application, right? Let's say, you know, I send you an email and there needs to be some way to notify the application on your device that you get that email.
Sure.
Well, one way, and kind of the old, very old way of doing things, was that you would have a service running inside your application all the time that would be, you know, long polling a server saying, hey, is there any new data? Is there any new data? Is there any new data? But all of the mobile operating systems, you know, Windows Mobile, iOS, Android, they have a push notification service built inside of them. And what's great about that is that instead of every single application having a background service that's long pulling a server saying, hey, do you got any data? You got any data?
Stealing your CPU. Yeah.
Stealing your CPU and your battery,
that's
for
right.
sure. So there's one centralized service on all of these operating systems that does that for you. And so you basically can consume that service and say, hey, I want to send a push notification to my application, and here's the data I want to send. And, you know, in my email situation, it's, you know, here's the header of that email. And so you can pop up a little toast or, you know, a notification that says,
sure.
hey, you have an email. So it basically, it makes that getting information to the device from your server side easier without having to necessarily request it from your client application.
I see. And Drew just commented how, like, his notifications are every time he takes a picture of his pet Yorkie, obviously, we're going to be notified, which is an important feature.
I know I want to know when the Yorkie's going to picture
taken. Thank you, Drew. So now that we have that, let's switch gears a little bit. We have about maybe 8 minutes left.
Okay.
Let's switch gears to, now that we know we have the back end all stable with the apps or mobile app service, let's talk about sort of the options that you have for the client side for building applications.
Absolutely. Well, as you'd imagine, we have it made it very easy to build client applications no matter what you're building.
Right.
So if you're building a native iOS, a native Android, a Windows, a universal Windows project, if you're using PhoneGap or Cordova or any of those platforms, mm-hmm. and obviously one of the things we've really made easy is the Xamarin scenario, where you're
right.
building out a .NET application that's going to run on iOS and on Android and on Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the scenarios and all of the, you know, the capabilities of mobile apps have been lit up and made in a very easy way for a Xamarin application.
I see.
So again, you know, the idea of Xamarin being, you know, write once, run everywhere, which is, you know, mostly true.
Pretty
and the
cool,
yeah. And the great thing about the mobile app SDK is that it works in that way, so that you're not necessarily having to write stuff for iOS and stuff for Android. You use this Xamarin SDK for mobile apps, and you use all those capabilities, and you only write it once.
I see. So let's talk about sort of the workflow of building a Xamarin application. Is it really you just write it and it just works everywhere? I mean, I feel like there's got to be some kind of delta somewhere.
There is a little bit of a delta. So there are specific things where you need to implement kind of a per-platform capability. So, you know, originally the idea was, you know, hey, this lets you write .NET, but you still need to write .NET for iOS and .NET for Android. And then more recently, there was, you know, the ability to share code with either PCLs or shared code projects. And that's really what allowed you to really share code and not have to rewrite everything for each platform. And then even more recently, Xamarin Forms lit up the ability to create shared UI.
Right.
Now, there are still things where you kind of have to do it on a per-platform basis. If you need specific UI controls, you really do need to create the UI in both, you know, Xamarin iOS, Xamarin Android, and Windows.
Sure.
If you're doing stuff that uses native platform capabilities that, you know, depend on the UI structure, so, you know, view controllers in iOS versus activities in Android versus pages in Windows, then you kind of need to build that out in a per-platform basis. But you really, you know, the code, the thing there is that, A, you're still doing C#, so if you're very familiar with C#, or even F#, really, you can write in that language that you're familiar with. You don't have to resort to the native code. But then there really is a lot of code reuse. It's not 100%. You're still going to write stuff on each platform,
mm-hmm.
but it's .NET. You know, it's going to be easier for you. And, you know, it does give you the ability to share quite a bit.
So how much of each individual platform do you really need to have a good feeling for? Like, for example, you've noticed you said something about activities, you said something about controllers, right? Do you have to know intimately how they do stuff, even though you're still using Xamarin?
So one of the ideas of Xamarin Forms is it starts to abstract a little bit more away from that having to have individual platform knowledge. At the end of the day, though, you really want to have an understanding of the design paradigms of each individual operating system,
right.
because you want to build an application that looks and performs well on each operating system.
Of course.
So you still want to have a good understanding of the underlying concepts of, you know, lifecycle and view structure and things like that. But you don't need to know 100% of how does everything work with, you know, Android and Java, and how does everything work with Objective-C and iOS.
I see. So if you're going to build a mobile application, right, would you suggest any particular route? Should you pick a platform first and optimize for that? Or should you try to do all three at once? I mean, how would you do it?
So the way I would look at it is it's... If you know ahead of time that, hey, at the end of the day, I want a Windows application, a UWP, I want an Android application, I want an iOS application, try to start building it out in so much that you're going to test each platform as you go.
I see.
The caveat to that is that because you do want to test, you know, a good amount on each individual platform, if you, you know, if you have like, say I'm going to build some giant application and I need to test all the functionality on each platform, you know, it's going to still take a while because of all the testing and, you know, the detailing per platform. If you're willing to accept, hey, I want this operating system first, you know, focus on that, but keep in mind that you want to try to abstract the code away to make it even easier to, you know, go and build out those other platforms later on.
Awesome. So we have about 3 minutes left. What are some successes you've seen in building Xamarin applications, whether your code you've written or code other people have written?
So there are some really great example applications that we've got, both as stuff that Microsoft's done in the past. So there was the Health Biz application we did at the Connect event last year, and then the My Driving sample that we did this past year, or rather this past build, and then Xamarin's own Evolve applications, their conference apps, a really great example of building cross-platform with Xamarin on, you know, all of these platforms, as well as using Azure, actually.
I see.
And then if you actually go on, you know, the Xamarin page, they've got references to a lot of, you know, really big companies that build out applications on top of Xamarin. So it really is being used out there. And, then, you know, since now, you know, Xamarin's a part of Microsoft and it's, you know, free, which was, you know, honestly a blocker for people before.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing a lot more usage of it even now than, you know, ever before.
So as you've been ramping up on Xamarin, obviously you've probably done it forever. What was some of the sort of gotchas that you can sort of help us as we navigate through?
Yeah, so the thing is with Xamarin is that, and one of the fears I think native developers had about Xamarin is that it would perform poorly. And really the great thing is that if you actually look at some performance studies of Xamarin versus other platforms, it really is actually quite fast. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it can actually be faster than native development, depending on what you're doing, of course.
Sure, sure.
But the thing is that it's you know, it's not a silver bullet. You still have to keep in mind performance considerations.
Right.
And Xamarin has great guides about, hey, if you're building Xamarin Android, here are some things to keep in mind to make sure you're optimizing for memory. Because, you know, when you're doing Xamarin Android, you've got both the mono runtime and the Android runtime that store references. So you could easily, potentially, you know, have memory issues.
Yeah.
The same is true for iOS. So there's, you know, things out there to keep in mind, and then as far as performance goes. And then the other thing is just remembering that sometimes you do need to break into the per-platform code.
Which is okay.
Absolutely. It really is. It really is.
So what is your favorite part of Xamarin so far, what you've worked with?
I really think the ease of being able to really share some of the code is really amazing. I mean, you get to the point where you don't have to rewrite things every single time. It's really great.
Which is nice. And now, obviously, we have about probably 30 seconds left. We have to talk a little bit about Drew's questionable wardrobe choices.
I know. It really is just...
I can't even look at him right now. It's pretty devastating.
It's sad. It's what it is.
So what's next for you? Any cool events that you're going to next where you're going to be talking about these things?
You know, I've got a bunch of internal events I'm going to be doing, and I'm looking forward. I think the fall we'll have a lot of fun events coming up.
We should do some more Channel 9 things, man. About
that would be great.
Have your own show. Tell them about your show.
So I also host Cloud Cover on Channel 9. So that show is focused all on everything to do with Azure and Microsoft's cloud platform. So you just check it out. We record just about every week, and we do some fun stuff.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for watching. We are going to be back soon. Take care.